Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's that time of the week again, time for the Friday gathering. And this week I'm joined by Fine Gael TD for Kildare South and Minister of State for Research and Development, Farm Safety and New Market Development, Martin Hayden, Labour Party TD for Dublin Fingal and spokesperson on health, Duncan Smith, and political correspondent for the Irish Independent, Gabby Agatafit-Skaita, and also former editor with the Irish News, Noel Doran. We're going to turn our attention first to events at the Grand Canal, where a week on from the clearance of Mount Street, another clearance got underway yesterday morning, but this morning We're reporting that 30 more tents have reappeared along the Grand Canal. And Martin Hayden, to you first on this. The Taoiseach says there can't be any more ad hocery. 30 more tents along the Grand Canal looks pretty ad hoc, doesn't it?
And look, this is a real challenge for us, you know, and we're dealing with it in real time. We've had such a challenge over the last couple of years when you consider 2 years ago, March 2022, we had just over 10,000 people in direct provision or seeking international protection here in Ireland. That figure now this month is up over 30,000. We have in the last year provided an additional 10,000. We're accommodating 10,000 more people through being able to do that. But obviously, accommodation alone isn't going to fix this, because we have to have the, you know, the multi-strand approach of being able to deal with the significant influx of people as well, making sure that our system, which, you know, which we are tightening up on, our firm, fair immigration policy around making sure that we can process these applications quicker. But we're dealing with at a time that those numbers coming are increasing. So that's why there's the short-term element, there's the accommodation piece, but it needs to be a whole-of-government approach, and actually needs to be a European-wide approach in terms of the migration
pact.
You
say it needs to be. Has it not been?
It, hands up, I'm a government minister here and we have to do better. But I am painting the picture that this is a really difficult situation. Every government, particularly across Europe, is really struggling with this. We have three wars that are horrendous. In Sudan, 800,000 people lost their lives last year. We've the Middle East, we've Ukraine, we've climate change. You know, if you're a farmer in the Horn of Africa and your cows have all died of drought, little old green Ireland with lush fields, economy with full employment, we're a pretty attractive place to come to. So are other European countries. So there are more people on the move around the world now than ever before. And that is a challenge that we have to continue to work with. And, you know, our response continues to evolve in that in real time.
All right. So Duncan Smith, what do you make of the response so far? Do you accept that tents, given, I suppose, where the numbers are at the moment, are going to be part of the response inevitably?
Probably, but not the type of tented accommodation we're seeing now. I mean, this, I don't see anyone living in tents or having to get shelter in tents. But we've been calling now for 2 years for a minister dedicated to the refugee crisis, the mass movement of people. There's been too much put on Roderick O'Gorman, and other ministers have turned their back on him. This is not something that has just cropped up over the last couple of weeks. This has been 2 years on the back of many years on mainland Europe. We are in a very attractive place for people to come and seek refuge, given the many benefits that there are to our economy and our society. But we haven't planned well for them. Where are the modular houses that were planned? They seem to have gone totally off the radar. We need to see the repurposing of buildings, but right now we probably need to see military style, those kind of military style tented accommodation, safer tented accommodation with better access to sanitation and food and everything that's required in the immediate and short
located
term.
Located where?
Located in state-owned land, located maybe in Defence Force Barracks and HSC land, any land that we have, not on the side of canals. That's not a safe place to be, not in the centre of our city, on the side of our streets. That's not a safe place to be, but somewhere on state-owned land where people can be safe, where they can be accommodated and sheltered in a more comfortable manner, whilst this government catch up on the amount of ground that they've lost in terms of repurposing office buildings. You know, we've mentioned state buildings. We're blue in the face mentioning Baggot Street Hospital and the Jersey Inn Hotel, but there's places all over the country that could be repurposed. Get the modular housing up. This isn't an issue that's going to go away. The mass movement of people across the the globe is happening for multiple reasons, for conflict, for climate, for people seeking better economic conditions, fleeing persecution on basis of race, on basis of sexuality, on any number of reasons. And Europe will always be attractive, and Ireland will always be attractive. So we need to, you know, adapt our systems and ensure that we are able to adapt to the global crisis that we're facing. We have not done that, despite the fact the Ukrainian war, which is a bit of a starter gun for the big influx of people, is 2 years right. plus now.
Gabby Gadovitz guided the imagery of tents just looks like the response is ad hoc. And I suppose there is public anxiety in some quarters about this, but I suppose the appearance of there being less than a developed plan isn't going to help that.
No, not at all. And can I add, we're 2 years now into this migrant crisis. When we saw the war in Ukraine kick off, and, you know, tens of thousands of Ukrainians came here fleeing shelter, we're now seeing that the state has kind of got a hold on that, but when it comes to asylum seekers, definitely not. And Simon Harris came into the office of Taoiseach, of Ann Taoiseach, and he moved very quickly last week to clear up Mount Street, and that was heralded as a victory, perhaps in government circles, but for a very short period of time, because of course tents started popping up literally everywhere else, and now the government response seems to be to put up barriers and to cordon off certain parts of town. Like, that's certainly not sustainable. The other point that I'd make is, you know, there was a tender that's been put out by government now to purchase properties, large properties, to house asylum seekers. That tender is open until the end of, I think, next April. Like, that tender should have been put out 2 years ago. It shouldn't have been only doing now. So certainly when it comes to the asylum seeker part of things, we are seeing a very emergency response from government. And it has been that for the past 2 years when it comes to migrants coming in. And as we know, certainly, you know, even Duncan saying there, Ireland is a very attractive country, something that the government is thinking about now. And I don't know how Minister Hayden feels about this. But for example, in there's a €75 that's given extra to asylum seekers who are not given state accommodation. Apparently there's some thinking within the coalition, you know, should we maybe reduce that to make that less attractive for people? You know, certainly I know that the government is looking at reducing the benefits for all Ukrainian migrants that are here already. But the response all through has been very, very ad hoc, and it's not moved past the emergency stage.
All right. In terms of people arriving in the country, Noel Doran, it came almost as a source of surprise to people at the Justice Committee the week before last, when Helen McEntee said that 80% of that movement was potentially across the border with Northern Ireland. Is this a trend that's been noticed in Northern Ireland, or was that the first you'd heard of it as well?
It was a bolt from the blue, and it seems to have surprised ministers at Stormont as much as it did people working in that field. Now, the minister has suggested that she has evidence to back that up. People who are working with refugees have disputed those figures along the way. There's been very little evidence in the north of a mass movement of people in the last number of months. Clearly, Belfast has been getting a little more diverse. I think we would have noticed numbers on that level. But how we cope with it, I suppose, is the next big issue. Just to keep the programme up to date, I travelled down by train from Belfast this morning, crossed the border just over 2 hours ago, and I did note that Barry Cowan TD was talking about spot checks on the border. There were no checks on that train today, I'm very glad to say. There were people from all backgrounds on a packed train. That's just one issue. How would you come to terms with that? Never mind private cars crossing the border along the way.
Especially with the famous 300-mile border, over 200 crossing points that we heard during Brexit. It's impossible to police. So advocating for spot checks at this point, is it tenable in your view?
If he's got a plan, I'd be very keen to see it and see it outlined. But I think there are a number of areas where people are struggling to cope, as the previous speakers have said. This is one of the biggest crises of our lifetime. It's not going to go away through floods and famine and plagues and wars. The refugee movement is going to continue. We're dealing with huge figures, over 30,000 refugees, we're told, is the latest figure. It's going to get worse, and we need to believe that there is a plan among the authorities. And while, you know, Martin has suggested we need a Europe-wide approach, we might need to start off with an Ireland-wide approach, with a more joint-up thinking between North and South, because when we talked about the Ukrainians, we believe 107,000 Ukrainians have arrived here in the last 2 years. Of those, 103,000 are south of the border, some 3,000 north of the border. There are differences in the grants, but they're relatively minor. is there no way that the two sets of authorities can get together and look at that?
Well, the joined up thinking is Ireland is Rishi Sunak's offer to Ireland join the Rwanda scheme, and I think there's no appetite within government to do that.
All right, but Martin Hayden, but the issue of you can't necessarily control the number of people arriving here. You can be part of a European system. There's already efforts in place in Africa and in Europe to try and slow the movement of people. But what you can plan for is the provision of accommodation. You say it's only one part of it, but it's a part that's directly controlled by the government. So when is there going to be the unveiling of the six sites for accommodation centres? What is their capacity going to be? And when is the public communication on that going to begin?
I would hope it's going to be very soon. And as a government minister, I want to see that happen as soon as possible.
Because but there's been calls for it in you know, Catherine Day headed up an expert group and that reported in 2020. And I think in 2022, again, why has that not been acted on?
So, like, obviously, there's a lot of work here in terms of the longer term piece. And there's three different approaches on the accommodation side. There is the emergency response, there is the medium term piece, which has been largely filled by the private sector, and the longer term piece has to be state provision. And I want to see that happen as soon as possible. And I know the insinuation maybe in the question is that
why hasn't it happened before? Because it would be there, arguably, had it been acted on earlier.
Yeah, and look, I'm frustrated by that too. I'd like to see this happen as soon as possible, because, you know, we don't want to see the only hotel in the town being taken over by this. We want to move away from a situation where it is just developer-led offers of buildings. And, you know, like, we have a lot of state-owned land. Duncan gave some examples there, where even in the short term, whether it's modular or whether it's even the tented accommodation, that's what we need, which is better than that's what by the canal.
So
just to be clear, back to my original point though, we are accommodating 10,000 more people seeking international protection than we were this time last year. It's not that we're not increasing capacity, and it's not that we're not providing those spaces. Obviously, as you've outlined, the demand is still there. People are still coming, as they are to all European countries. And this is something that every European country is trying to deal with in real time. And so we are increasing the amount of accommodation. And the longer term piece, obviously, the comprehensive accommodation strategy sees Roderick O'Gorman's department going to be given state land. And also then there's the approval from the Department of Public Expenditure for the acquisition of larger buildings.
It seems to take an awful long time. I know you're going through, you know, planning issues, but you'll be aware yourself, you know, in County Kildare, there is accommodation being put on agricultural land. Work began on the site before even a contract had been signed. And, you know, there are people in the area who aren't happy with it. But at the same time, you know, you can move with speed. Why aren't you moving at greater scale with speed?
Well, look, you know, as the Taoiseach said this week, the whole of government response, and I take Duncan's viewpoint that there should be one minister. I don't agree. I think every minister owns this, and this is about the complete integration of all the challenges from the housing side, from the integration piece, from the justice piece, and that's what government is doing, is working together to deliver as quickly as possible.
All right, Duncan Smith.
Yeah, like, yeah, it should be every minister. You mentioned housing, we're talking about accommodation. The Minister for Housing is silent on this issue. He's been silent on this issue for 2 years, and that's unsustainable. So, yeah, we say we want a whole of government approach.
But wouldn't there be more of that under your proposal? If there was a Minister for Immigration and a Minister for Integration, the Housing Minister wouldn't need to say anything either, because it would be siloed in one department.
We would have that Minister would lead. We have Minister Roderick O'Gorman with the longest ministerial title, I think, in the history of the state. He's in charge of almost everything: children, integration, youth, disability.
If we brought
a senior minister as well, who could head up an interdepartmental group, bring the Minister for Housing in, and would be the one
person. At the
cost
of what ministry? What would you scrap to bring in a new minister? Because there's a limit on the number of portfolios
we could probably scrap a super junior to make sure someone could sit at.
So it'd be a super junior rather than a full cabinet
This is a global crisis.
Roderick O'Gorman is currently
This is a global crisis, and we are not giving it the effort it deserves. But in terms of why the six reception centres haven't happened, I subscribe to the theory that many people do, that if you look up polls all around this country at the moment, we're in election season, and there is a sense that this has been put on the long finger because they didn't want. Well, that's the only explanation, and everyone in Leinster House believes that that's the case.
I can tell you. From a political perspective, I would much prefer, as a lot of my colleagues would say as well, defend the state-provided large-scale site than the individual developer-led premises that are here, there and everywhere.
That's a shout-out now to put it on Department of Defence land in the Corrie Camp in your own constituency, is it?
And Department of Agriculture and every other department will be considering and seeing what's available, because that's what we have to do. Right. It's an emergency response.
Gabia, what is the speculation about this, or what's the feeling? Because in the absence of it not being announced, there'd be speculation as to why it's not been announced.
Yeah, and of course the question is it going to be in my back garden? Is it going to be my constituency? And so if one of those six sites is in my constituency, well, am I going to vote for any of the government parties in the local and European elections? And I think that's why the speculation is so rife. And, you know, rightfully so. I will disagree that I think Catherine Martin probably has the longest ministerial title of any minister. But, I mean, if you're talking about having a minister specific for X, Y and Z, the point that the government has made is that Helen McEntee obviously has a role on the justice side. Roderick O'Gorman has a role on the integration side. It is true to say that Dara O'Brien, you know, the points that have been made for Fianna Fáil is saying, look, we have to solve the housing crisis. We have to make sure there's enough homes being built for first-time buyers. We've enough on our plate already. But in fairness with Roderick O'Gorman, you know, trying to bring down childcare fees, trying to deal with all of those historical issues of the mother and baby homes, you know, and so on. So he does, in fairness to him, have a lot on his plate.
All right. Noel Doran, it sounds like a very busy government agenda. We had we saw long-awaited publications of three reports into RTE this week. The broadcaster's got 6 weeks to take on board the various recommendations on the reforms outlined and to secure its funding model. What's your view on what model of funding is best given the debate as to direct exchequer funding or maintaining a form of the licence fee but collected by revenue?
I think some form of the licence fee has to be maintained. I think anything else is very dangerous for the future of RTE. With great respect to all the politicians, I'm sure that they will bring the highest possible standards to that debate. But if politicians have the opportunity to exercise some financial control over broadcasters, some of them will take advantage of that. We've seen that elsewhere. There's a huge debate in London at the moment. We know that the Conservative Party would like to clamp down on the BBC and would probably like to remove the licence fee there. Journalism in particular has never been more important in Ireland, North and South. It needs to be protected. It needs to be sustained. I think the licence fee is part of the way that we can look at that. We've seen some very alarming developments in London in the last few days over the surveillance of journalists. This is not a rumour. It's been demonstrated in open court that maybe at least eight and maybe substantially
more. It's a
matter
of how many rather than if.
Well, we're led to believe that eight journalists could be the tip of the iceberg, and it crosses a range of news organisations. Quite likely during the time that I edited the Irish News, some of our staff were being monitored and having their phones checked by the authorities. There's a link with RTE. The RTE's Northern editor has evidence that he was caught up in it during his time in the BBC. So this isn't just some sort of random small operation. It's a massive issue which has major implications for press freedom. So it's just one of the reasons which stresses that the freedom of the press has to be protected and that the broadcasters, particularly RTE, which is such a vital role to play in Ireland, North and South, needs to be protected and sustained.
All right, Gabby, I think it's kind of taken as a given that RTE will accede to the implementation of the 116 recommendations across those three reports. But I suppose part of the real debate is the one around the cabinet table as to what model prevails.
Yeah, and that's been the argument for years and years and years, even before we saw the scandal erupt last June surrounding those payments to former presenter Ryan Tubridy. The debate for ongoing successive governments has been, how do we overhaul the television licence? How do we make it work better? RTE has made the case for many years saying that it doesn't work. There's not enough enforcement around it. The RTE position is that, you know, they want revenue to come in and collect it. OnPost currently collects it. I suppose the view within government is transferring it to revenue would make it look like a tax. Interesting now, this row seems to be brewing within the coalition. Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, more in favour of a hybrid sort of overhaul. So you would have maybe a lower television licence that would be collected by the revenue every single year and some form of a taxpayer budgetary top-up. The view from within the Greens is that the Exchequer funded model, so scrap the television licence totally, fund RTE solely out of the Exchequer through not every budget but maybe through a multi-budgetary process. So for example, this government might say for the next 5 years RTE is going to get 200 million or whatever it may be, and then it'll only be in 5 years 5 years that that'll be reviewed again by whoever's in charge then. But I don't know if the Greens are going to get their way on this one.
Duncan Smith, that's the model you favour, is it? The multi-annual direct exchequer funding?
Yeah, and there's ways to mitigate against political interference, which we'd all be fearful of, like that. If it is multi-annual, if it's done by a mathematical formula that's going to be set over a couple of years, obviously you'll come to that cliff edge where it'll have to be
sure. Well, and that's it.
But the reason there was such outrage over the RTE scandal last year is because people are so invested in it because they pay their license fee, you know, and having that connection to your public sector broadcaster.
I think there were probably a fair few people outraged who didn't pay their license fee as well.
Perhaps, but the majority do, and I think that link to public sector broadcasting to the public sector broadcaster, I think, is a good thing as well. But no, having a multi-annual funding that would be protected in such a way and would be, you know, clear and transparent in terms of how it would be calculated, I think is a journey to go on.
But is it not another one of those expenditure lines that people are happy to point towards as something they'd like cut over time? You know, governments all over the world point at things like, you know, foreign aid and a number of other things where they say, let's spend that on something more important, something closer to home, on bread and butter issues first.
So I think there is what's gone hand in hand with this scandal is what we've been related to what we were speaking about earlier is disinformation, misinformation. People are genuinely fearful of an uncontrolled media space, or a media space that's going to be heavily influenced by nefarious actors at whatever end of the spectrum. So, you know, I think people are engaged into that, and we have to trust the people, and we have to trust the people that the people elect as well to protect that.
Martin Hayden, do you have a view on how RTE should be funded?
Yeah, well, obviously, what we need to have is a sustainable funding system that ensures media's independence. And this isn't just about RTE, the Sound and Vision Fund. It's about public service content. It's also about our local radios. It's also about local print media and protecting that integrity. But what we need to have is something that has public acceptability. And actually, regardless of what the final mechanism is, the taxpayer, the men and women who work every day, pay their taxes, are effectively going to be paying here, whether it's direct exchequer funding, whether it's some type of a charge or whatever. So the only way that this works is if in the next 6 weeks RTE take that really big step of winning back the public's trust, show that they have that regard again for public money, that some of what happened in the past showed a disregard for the public money that they were having. And I know the vast majority of people in RTE didn't benefit from that. The people who work in on the news side and all the rest, but that trust has been eroded, and we have to.
But is it not just the government kicking the can down the road for yet another 6 weeks? Like Catherine Martin, she had a Future of Media Commission that she put in place, was it 2 years ago? They came back with their recommendations. She then put in a technical working group to come up with how the television licence can be reformed. Then we had the scandal break. Then we had these external governance and HR reports that were delayed, and now they're finally here. And now we're going to see yet another 6 week can kick down the road. Like, the government just has to make up their mind on it.
So the Taoiseach has been really clear. We will have a decision on this before the summer recess. So
but you're not going to pass laws to that are actually going to overhaul the TV licence before you finish up in government, though, are you?
Oh, so the government could run till next March, unless you know something I don't, about when the next election will be.
But is that enough time to pass those laws? You're talking about us making decisions.
I'm telling you really clearly here, we are going to have a decision on this.
But there's a difference between making a decision and then passing the laws that are going to actually give effect to that decision.
I know, but that can be done quite quickly afterwards, and particularly if there's agreement in the Oireachtas. But it does need to be debated, and that's right. And everyone from both sides of the House and in both houses need to have their say. But the overall point here is, of course, the 6 weeks is hugely important. We can have all the reports we like, but unless RTE senior management don't say, right, we're absolutely going to implement them. Like, I welcome the fact they've accepted all of the recommendations of the 116, I think 101 are for RTE, 15 are for government. We'll do our bit. But this 6 weeks is critically important for winning back that public acceptability.
All right. Okay. We're going to have to go because there was a candidate from Midlands Northwest mentioned earlier in the programme. So it is our obligation that we have to read out all candidates in that constituency as a result of that. So the candidates in alphabetical order for the Midlands Northwest constituency in the European Parliament elections are Justin Barrett of the National Party, Neil Blaney of Fianna Fáil, Anthony Cahill of the Irish People, Nina Carberry of Fine Gael, Peter Casey, Independent, Lisa Chambers, Fianna Fáil, Luke Ming Flanagan, Independent, Stephen Garland, Independent, Rory Hearn, Social Democrats, Charlotte Keenan, Independent, Herman Kelly, Irish Freedom Party, Fergal Landy, the Labour Party, Chris McManus, Sinn Féin, Margaret Maguire, Ireland First, Saoirse McHugh, Independent, Kieran Mullooly, Independent Ireland, Brian O'Boyle, People Before Profit Solidarity, Pauline O'Reilly from the Green Party, Daniel Pocock, Independent, James Reynolds, the National Party, Michelle Smith, Independent, Padda Tobin, Aonthu, Maria Walsh, Fine Gael, Dr. Jerry Waters, Independent, and John Waters, Independent. We'll take a break. We're back in a minute.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.